Hello at welcome sa isa na namang episode dito sa ating season na Shakers and Shapers, kung saan pinag-uusapan natin ang mga influential personalities at groups that shaped the history of martial law and the EDSA People Power Revolution. I am Aaron Maliari.
I'm Joselito Ebro.
I am Lee Candelar.
Ako si Vekel Porha, and this is Podcast, Conversations on Philippine History, Politics, and Society.
Maraming salamat po sa maraming taon na kami po ay inyong pinatuloy sa inyong mga tahanan. Maraming salamat po sa maraming taon na ating pinagsamahan. Hanggang sa muli, kapamilya.
The audio you just heard was from the last station sign-off ng ABS-CBN noong May 5, 2020. Which ironically happened 2 days after World Press Freedom Day. The shutdown, as many would know, was due to the National Telecommunications Commission, or NTC's, order revoking the franchise of then the largest broadcast media firm in the Philippines due to tax concerns.
And unfortunately for many Filipinos, the closure happened during the pandemic, a time when Filipinos were in dire need of accurate information to survive. Alala ko nga may malaking epekto yung shutdown na yan sa mga provinces, especially sa mga hard-to-reach areas where Filipinos rely more on TV and radio programs ng ABS-CBN since yun daw yung malakas ang signal.
Big news nga ito, no, 4 years ago. And of course, we kind of know or aware of the underlying reasons behind it. Pero di na lang tayo mag-talk, no? So, that time, malaking concern ang possible, syempre, chilling effect nitong closure, especially sa Philippine media industry. While to some, the shutdown signifies an assault on free speech, we can point to how vindictive the Duterte administration was, since ABS-CBN then was being very critical to the Duterte administration. No? So, o diba, syempre, nasabi rin natin.
I think until now, doubtful pa rin kung maibabalik ng Channel 2 ang kanilang prangkisa. Pero bakit pa nga ba? Ano? Currently, former ABS programs are now available in digital media. And just recently, the noontime show It's Showtime moved to GMA7, yung station rival ng ABS, prompting the end of the channel war, kumbaga. Uso to before, di ba, nung kabataan natin.
Grabe no, looking back, napaka-petty nung channel wars na yan, no, nung kabataan natin. But interestingly, this is not the first time na nangyari itong nawala sa ere, itong ABS-CBN. Kung matandaan, all forms of free media were closed upon the declaration of martial law, at kabilang na nga rito ay yung ABS-CBN na pagmamayari ng Lopez family. Ilan rin sa mga kumpanya ng Lopez family ang kinamkam ng mga Marcos, such as the Manila Electric Company or Meralco, and the Manila Chronicle, which for many only serves as a sideshow to the broader rift between Ferdinand and the Lopezes.
Interesting nga yung storyline ng ABS-CBN and the Lopez family. Ano? Parang roller coaster kumbaga. The station was a merger of two broadcasting firms, Alto Broadcasting System or ABS, and the Chronicle Broadcasting Network, CBN. Both acquired by Eugenio Lopez after the Second World War. Mawawala yan during martial law at muling mabubuhay post-EDSA at muli na namang mawawala come 2020. Parang kakabit na talaga ng politika ang kwento ng ABS.
Kaya naman in this episode, we'll explore the business and political involvement of the Lopez family. Sino nga ba sila at gaano kalaki ang kanilang influence sa media and politics ng ating bansa? Pag-usapan natin yan sa ating pagbabalik.
Perhaps it would be an understatement na sabihing mayaman ang mga Lopezes, ano? Kasi marami sa mga kilalang kumpanya sa bansa ay pagmamay-ari o minsang naging pagmamay-ari ng mga to. So from media and telecommunications like ABS-CBN to power and energy such as Meralco, saka FirstGen, at marami pang iba. All part of the conglomerate Lopez Holdings Corporation, founded by Eugenio Lopez Sr. and Fernando Lopez Sr.
Well, totoo, no? So, at masasabi nga na kabilang sila sa mga, yung mga old rich in Philippine society, mga alta sociedad, no? So, at hindi maiiwasang tanungin kung saan nga ba galing ang yaman nila, no? So, siguro ang maikling sagot dyan ay asukal.
Yes, asukal, no? In 5 generations, the family has produced dynamic entrepreneurs and political leaders, from serving as local merchants and barangay leaders in Iloilo in mid-1800s to becoming pioneer planters in Negros in the latter decades of the 19th century. The Lopezes slowly built their fortunes from both political and commercial arenas when the Philippines transitioned from being a colony to an independent nation.
At sa paglawak ng influence ng mga Lopez, mahalagang mabanggit ang pangalang Eugenio Halandoni Lopez Sr., a sugar baron who acquired vast amounts of sugar lands, serving as a foundation of the family's wealth. He developed and owned a total of 2,592 hectares divided among 11 haciendas in Negros and Iloilo. Based on the records, these figures would increase to 4,000 hectares. And for reference, yung 4,000 na yan is equivalent to 40 million square meters. Wow!
Siguro kung ganyan kalawak ang lupain ko, hindi na ako mag-work.
Ako rin.
Pero hindi ganon ang character ng Lopez family. Instead, they always sought for more opportunities. At isa na nga rito ay ang pagpasok nila sa mundo ng politika. So Eugenio's son, Benito, won the first elections for Iloilo's provincial governorship in 1903. Naging promising ang karir nitong si Benito. Ano, he showed dynamic leadership and hard work by touring remote municipalities to promote the education and infrastructure reforms of the Americans.
Unfortunately, his promising political career abruptly ended in 1907. No? So, 2 months after his re-election, Benito was assassinated by a former revolutionary officer named Joaquin Hill. No? So, leaving Benito's fortune to his widow, Presentacion Jofileña, and their 2 children, Eugenio and Fernando.
Compared sa lawak ng lupain ng mga Lopezes, no? Hindi ganun kalaki ang naiwan ni Benito sa kanyang pamilya. Eugenio and Fernando only inherited a single hacienda and a small printing press from their father. Konti lang, di ba?
Humble beginning.
Pero sa tulong na rin ng kanilang mga mayamang kamag-anak, they would later transform, no, the image of the Lopez family into kingmakers, especially during the post-war Philippine politics. By 1973, it is estimated that they amassed assets worth $300 million.
And like many other elite families in the Philippines, the Lopez family put premium in education. Itong si Eugenio, or si Enying, ang kanyang nickname, he studied at the Ateneo, he graduated cum laude, and he went on to study law at the University of the Philippines. After graduation, he went to Harvard Law, the first in the Lopez family to do so. Meanwhile, ito namang si Fernando, or si Nanding, ang kanyang nickname, he went to Letran and then took up law sa UST. After the war, the two, however, turned to different paths, or should I say different focus siguro, no? Kasi after World War II, itong si older na Lopez, si Enying, he emerged as a powerful business tycoon. Samantalang itong mas bata, si Nanding, he turned to public service naman, to the point that he was a heartbeat away from the Philippine presidency at some point.
So paano ba nila yan nagawa? At may secret ingredient ba sa mga ganyan? Marami pa tayong pwedeng makwento. Tutukan natin yan sa ating pagbabalik.
Cool. kung may secret ingredient man na matatawag, no, sa meteoric rise ng Lopez brothers sa national politics and economy ng bansa, sure ako hindi yung asukal, no. So well, siyempre partly, no, so kasi economic power yon, no. Malaking parte kasi diyan ay ang connections that these people established, lalo't magkakapamilya naman karamihan ng mga politiko sa Pilipinas.
Totoo. May sinurat si Alfred McCoy about the Lopezes in his book, The Anarchy of Families. Ang ganda ng chapter na yon, since it traces the genealogy of the Lopezes and how they successfully use the state apparatus to their advantage. McCoy uses the concept of rent-seeking to describe the close, deep-seated relationship between the state power and private wealth in the Philippines, where the landed elites like the Lopezes and strongmen like Ferdinand Marcos, you know, exchanging favors in the forms of rents, rewarding themselves instead of using the state's resources to uplift the country's poor.
In other words, mahabang ligawan ang nangyayari to gain favors of those in power. And the Lopezes are masters of such game, no? They used presidential patronage to secure subsidized contracts and dominate state-regulated industries. Banggit pa ni McCoy, the role of rent explains how the Philippine state remains weak while Filipino local families remain strong.
So, mabalik tayo kila Inying at Nanding na para sa ilan ay may one-two-punch approach sa business at politika. May sarili kasi silang turf, kumbaga. Parang iyo ang Tondo, akin ang Cavite. Ayan. Inying focused on business while Nanding to politics. For many years, the Lopezes have courted the occupants of Malacañang Palace, like President Manuel Quezon. For example, in 1939, Quezon received the Lopez family sa Malacañang. Ninong pa nga si Quezon ng isa sa mga anak ni Inying na si Presentacion.
Before the outbreak of World War II, Inying returned to Iloilo and built his business enterprise. So one of their early ventures was the Iloilo Negros Aerial Taxi Company, o yung INAEC, or INAEC. So initially meant to transport sugar barons from Visayas to Manila, that later blossomed into a full-fledged airline called the Far East Air Transport Incorporated, o yung FIATI, no? So with flights to Hong Kong and Shanghai, no? So however, no, the company ceased operations due to the Pacific War. No, so the Lopezes resurrected the company after World War II, but a series of crashes prompted the government to investigate, forcing Lopez to sell FIATI to Philippine Airlines, owned by then Don Andres Soriano. No? Siguro nasa wrong side lang rin ang mga Lopezes, since they supported the re-election of Sergio Osmeña over the winning candidate Manuel Rojas in the 1946 elections. No? So we can say mag-iiba siguro yung ihip ng hangin had the Lopezes supported Rojas.
Despite their setback in FIATI, the post-war years proved to be a milestone to the business and political interests of the Lopez brothers. Nanding was appointed mayor of Iloilo by Osmeña, then reappointed by Rojas, and later became a senator in 1947. Instrumental sa pagkapanalo ni Nanding ang Manila Chronicle, a national newspaper acquired by Inying, which served as the mouthpiece of the Fernando Lopez family, especially during this campaign.
At siguro aware naman tayo lahat, no, kung gaano kalakas ang kapangyarihan ng media sa pag-influence ng public sentiments. Ito yung mismong point ni Mina Roses sa kanyang article na ang pamagat ay Kinship Politics in Post-War Philippines, The Lopez Family, 1945 to 1989. Ang sabi niya, ito yung description niya ng Manila Chronicle, no? Ito raw ay notorious for biased reporting, continuously endorsed Lopez political candidates, and censured Lopez enemies. Ayon pa kay Mina Roses, the paper was also used to pressure political and business rivals, including the President of the Philippines, to capitulate to demands in the interest of the Lopez family. Furthermore, the Lopez businesses were always highly praised in the Manila Chronicle supplements.
Sunod na niligawan ng mga Lopez, si Elpidio Quirino. Nanding became Quirino's running mate, partially dictated by the Sugar Baron's endorsement of Fernando Lopez's vice presidential bid. So parang andyan na yung suporta, nandyan na yung pera, hihindi ka pa ba? In support of his brother's campaign, Enying's Manila Chronicle vigorously featured Quirino-Lopez tandem. Quirino and Lopez were later proclaimed president and vice president in 1949.
In the 1950s, the Lopezes continued amassing their properties. No? So in 1951, Enying purchased the Binalbagan Isabela Sugar Company, Biscom, in Negros. 1956, na-acquire nila yung Pampanga Sugar Mill, Philippine Portland Cement, and in 1957, the ABS-CBN Broadcasting Corporation. No? These properties were acquired alongside the influential career of Fernando Lopez in national politics.
So in his defense, hindi naman daw niya kailangang pagkakitaan ng gobyerno as he entered politics as a businessman, earning 4 or 5 times more than his vice president's salary. Dagdag pa niya sa interview with Roses, sabi niya, "Nobody could tell us that I am taking advantage of my position as senator, as vice president to enhance our business. Nobody." So talaga ba?
Tumawid rin ng bakod to Nacionalista Party ang mga Lopezes. They supported the candidacy of Ramon Magsaysay, and after his death, they turned to Carlos Garcia. Well, heavily favored itong Lopez brothers. Ito rin yung panahon na nakuha nila or they acquired the Manila Electric Company o Meralco. Pero hindi lahat yan mangyayari ng ayon sa kanilang kagustuhan. Unfortunately for them, mag-iibang ihip ng hangin under the administration of Macapagal and later Marcos. Pag-usapan natin yan sa ating pagbabalik.
In 1962, the poor boy from Lubao, Estado Macapagal, won an upset victory against the incumbent Carlos Garcia. Macapagal later launched a major attack on the Lopez Sugar Block as part of its quote-unquote moral regeneration campaign, aiming to put an end to the era of special privileges. The government also accused the Lopezes of a 10 million tax evasion case and the illegal purchase of a lot reserved for the underprivileged. So sobrang familiar nung kwentong ito, no? With political pressures from Macapagal's government, the Lopez family faced the dilemma of whether to ask Nanding to run for the presidency or to ally with a popular politician who was likely to win the next election. They chose the latter, pushing them to support the candidacy of a strong man from Ilocos, Ferdinand Marcos. Enying gave full support to the Nacionalista Party by launching attacks against Macapagal's administration in the pages of the Chronicle.
In this scenario, kitang-kita yung patronage and favor from both ends, ano. So strong men such as Marcos gained favor from older elites such as the Lopezes. The latter also received benefits as they wanted to reestablish control. Kumbaga, tactical alliance ang naganap at all-out effort ang nangyari. A total of 14 million pesos was spent on the Marcos-Lopez campaign. And if today, malaking pera yan, sobrang laki niyan at that time. So the wives of the Lopez clan joined the Blue Ladies of Imelda Marcos, and even the company planes of Meralco were borrowed for the provincial travel, thus confirming the words of Lopez ally Alfredo Montelibano. Talagang ito ay quote-unquote go for broke or all out talaga against Macapagal.
Well, hindi naman talaga sila naubusan ng pera. Madadagdagan pa nga. Because on December 30, 1965, Marcos and Fernando Lopez took oath as president and vice president of the Philippines. The years that followed the Lopez family was at the height of their political and economic power. Dito, yung prized jewel nila, Meralco, expanded its operation through construction of more power plants and power stations and refining lubricating oil. In September 1966, the San Francisco Chronicle named In Ying as the richest man in Manila, the most powerful man in the Philippines, and the power behind the throne.
Medyo short-lived lang rin yung relationship na yan, ano, since Marcos, like Macapagal, launched a program to denounce the oligarchy, no, and yung mga vested interest in government activities, no. So this was around January 1971. Marcos claimed that the Lopezes were demanding concessions to advance their interests, no. Meanwhile, the Lopezes argued that Marcos was demanding shares in their family corporations. So, the Manila Chronicle later published exposés of graft and hidden wealth of the Marcoses. A series of tirades from both camps circulated in the media, prompting Marcos to reconcile with En Ying.
16 months later, martial law was declared. Marcos discarded his allies like the Laurels and the Lopezes, claiming that their media outlets supported radicals. The ABS-CBN broadcast center in Quezon City was occupied. Imelda's brother took over the facilities of Manila Chronicle, while Roberto Benedicto, another Marcos crony, won full control of the sugar industry.
Sa mga sumunod na taon, naging masalimuot ang buhay ng mga Lopez. To acquire Meralco, En Ying's son, Eugenio Jr. or Henny, was arrested in November 1972 and used as bait for the Lopez to relinquish control of the power firm. A year after En Ying signed the agreement selling the Lopez family shares, the government only paid 10,000 pesos as a down payment. Despite this, the Marcos government never released Henny.
Realizing that the Marcoses would never fulfill their promise of releasing Henny, En Ying released statements via newspaper interviews published in the U.S. Sa isang interview published in Parade magazine, ito yung sabi ni En Ying. I am an old man of 74. I am ill with cancer. I would like to have my son beside me to see him once more before I pass on. The report that Henny was involved in an attempt to assassinate Marcos is ridiculous. After all, Marcos was an old friend of ours. We supported him and Imelda until we realized his true aims. I have been blackmailed into silence, into giving up millions of dollars in my company assets. Enough is enough. I refuse to be blackmailed further. The Marcos and Romualdez families have bled me dry. End of quote.
En Ying died of cancer in 1975 in San Francisco, while Henny, along with Serge Osmeña, staged a successful escape from prison. So, along with his sister Presentacion and her husband Steve Sinakis, Henny stepped up their anti-Marcos activities in the U.S.
In 1984, Nanding allied with their former rivals in Iloilo, Fermin Karam Jr., to defeat Roberto Benedicto. Natalo si Benedicto in a very humiliating fashion, showing the losing popularity of the Marcoses and his allies. When Corazon Aquino ran against Marcos, Nanding raised her arm in proclamation rallies around Manila.
After the Edsa people power, the Lopez family gradually reclaimed their former possessions, given the continued anti-oligarchy sentiment that persisted after the collapse of the Marcos regime. Nevertheless, the Aquino administration reinstalled the Lopezes as the managers of their old corporations such as Meralco. Henny was later appointed as board chairman of the Philippine Commercial and Industrial Bank, or PCIB, a former Lopez corporation. And by mid-1987, the government administration leased Channel 2 to ABS-CBN, illustrating the return of their political and commercial importance.
So is this a happy ending to our story? Alamin sa ating pagbabalik.
So, in many ways, no, roller coaster na talaga yung nangyayari sa mga Lopez, ano. And perhaps it's the sad reality of politics and business in the country, no? So, yung mga dati mong kaibigan ay pwede mong maging kaaway in the future. And this also reveals the limitations of the executive power in outlasting the old elites in the government. No? So, I mean, Marcos Sr. can strip Lopez's wealth and position, but the accumulated networks and skills, kumbaga, of these people, hindi naman natin yun basta-basta maaalis.
True. At banggit nga ni Alfred McCoy, the Lopezes and their legacy to Philippine politics and society revealed the symbiosis between the weak Philippine state and the strength of the country's dominant political families, and proves that power and influence, borrowing from Mina Roses, of the Politica de Familia, continues to safeguard the cyclic nature of kinship politics.
Something that resonates pa rin, no, in present day. I remember the Duterte administration launched a similar move or tactic, gaya ni Macapagal at ni Marcos, where they cracked down elite families to a point na naging buzzword pa nga yung oligarchs sa maraming social media platforms. At alam natin na primary target dito ay ang mga Lopezes and ABS-CBN.
Pero para kanino ba yung mga maneuvers na ganyan? No? Kung babalikan natin yung attempt ni Ferdinand Marcos na ibagsak ang oligarkiya, no? Eh, hindi rin naman ito naging matagumpay. Kasi the old rich were only replaced by Marcos cronies. No? Parang itong ginawa rin ni Duterte, di ba? Yung second ABS-CBN shutdown. Ang nangyari lang naman ay it allowed the entry of new players, allies ni Duterte, di ba? Halimbawa, yung Villar Group, yung Sunshine Media Network, or SMNI, na nakakuha ng mga frequencies ng ABS-CBN. So parang ganun lang yung nangyari, no? Parang may mga pumalit lang na gustong mag-dominate or mag-monopolize ng market, no? So, yeah, nabawasan yung yaman ng mga Lopezes, pero parang may pumalit lang din, or may nakinabang.
At tulad ng nabanggit natin kanina, nabawasan man ang yaman ng mga Lopez, mayaman pa rin sila. So nagrebrand ang ABS-CBN, naging mass content company ito na nagpo-produce ng mga TV shows, films with other partners. And I hate to look at this as a silver lining, ano, pero huwag din naman siguro nating ipinta ang elite na biktima. Kasi sapat ang yaman at influence nila to fend for themselves and ensure their survival.
Indeed, no? So lagi at lagi ang welfare at ikabubuti ng kalakhang mamamayang Pilipino ang tingnan natin kapag nagbabanggaan ang political elite of the day at ang economic elite, no? At sometimes kapag sila-sila, dahil parehong economic at political elite, pag sila-sila mismo talaga ay naglalaban.
Mahaba tong kwento na to, no? At marami pa tayong pwedeng pag-usapan. Pero for now, I think pahinga muna. Tune in again next week for another episode of Shapers and Shakers, Personalities of EDSA Revolution.
For now, check out our earlier seasons and episodes. We are in all major podcast platforms, and our episodes are also available through our YouTube channel, Podcast TV.
Please follow our social media pages for more updates on the show. We are also on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, at iba pa.
So, kita-kita susunod na episode. Keep safe and have a good day.